session number 10602, Reel 24.
Reel 24. I asked you at the end of last reel about your reaction to being remobilised.
Yeah.
How did you feel about that?
Well, at the time, I was a bit depressed, if you like, if that's the modern word. I was low when I knew it had happened. But I hadn't been surprised at it happening. I know this might sound a bit daft, but when I was stationed in the Sudan in 1937, I'd read in the News of the World that when the Royal Navy were on manoeuvres in the Mediterranean, whenever they were dropping depth charges, very frequently Italian submarines would surface. The Royal Navy knew they were there, but they didn't drop them to damage the submarines, but they dropped submarines just to show them that they knew they were there. Now this came through the News of the World. That's I read that in the News of the World sometime in 1937. And then there was news reporters reporting about Germans driving motor cars with wooden sides or cardboard sides, representing armoured fighting vehicles, and staged clashes with these vehicles and made so that they fell apart. This was published as well. And then there was Hitler. I want the Sudetenland. I want this. I want Alsace-Lorraine. And when he got them, that's the end. And then the next minute he was asking for more. And then I had a feeling, a good feeling, that the only way to stop this man was to declare war. And it wasn't a surprise to me, as a regular soldier, that this happened. But at the same time, when it did happen, it wasn't a surprise, but it was with sorrow that I felt it. And I think anybody else who had cared for the woman I was going to marry, or hoped to marry, after all these years, that something else had to come, not family. I know it sounds a bit daft, but that's the way I felt. I couldn't tell you what my late wife felt, but that happened.
Can you tell me where you actually were when you heard that the broadcast war was declared?
I was in Fenham Barracks. I hadn't long arrived there from Rochester. I was later in getting there than the lads who lived in the north, because one, I had to wait of payments; two, I had to wait of paying me lodgings. The lady I lodged with, I had to pay square everything up with her before I left. And then travelling from down that part of the world, I had to bring my civilian clothes, which I'd bought. I knew I wouldn't be able to wear them in wartime. I had to take them to my aunt's in County Durham before I could proceed to the depot. So this all took time. But I think I got into the depot around about a Friday, Thursday or a Friday, just before the Sunday of the declaration of war.
Was there any reaction to the declaration of war amongst the men in the barracks?
I don't recall any reaction except that they had expected something like this to happen. I think they were more relieved to find that they were going to do something about it. That's the only expression I can give. There was no elation or shouting or you know, cheering, anything like that, because they were regular soldiers, and this was combined Northumberland Fusiliers and Durhams. It was a combined depot, and you met lads or the Fusiliers who you trained with, and you went and spoke to them and chatted them, and that was that. You just met them, and as regular soldiers or reservists, you had expected something like this happening. It happened. You accepted it, and you said, "Well, where do we go from here?"
Was there any discussion about how long the people thought the war would last?
Well, no, for the simple reason, the men who I knew and had soldiered with knew that we hadn't got the weapons which had been the propaganda had been saying, because we'd only fired our course less than a year previous, and we had never seen these weapons. So we were not being kidded that it would be a short war. We didn't think it would be. The regular soldier didn't. It was the civilians and the media who said it would be a short war, because we were the best equipped army in the world. We weren't.
Yes, was there any talk about the strength of the German army this time?
Well, we didn't know it. We just didn't know it. And a soldier, a good soldier, never underestimates his enemy. And he's only a fool, you know, who goes into war unless he's prepared. But you see, the German had shown part of his hand when he went into Poland. But we were still ignorant. I don't know where our Secret Service was. Because what we met in 1940 was quite different to what we'd even expected.
Did your knowledge of the lack of equipment that the British Army had at that time, or at least the DLI had for certain at that time, in any way perhaps make people nervous at the outcome of the war?
No, I don't think they were nervous. What I thought was that we always come off best in the end. It always seemed to be a phrase. No matter what serviceman you met, whether he was a Royal Navy, Royal Air Force or Army, they always seem to say, "Well, we always win the last battle." You know, we always win the last battle.
Okay. Can you tell me about what happened to you at Fenham now? Presumably you were re-equipped again, were you?
Well, we were gradually being re-equipped with uniforms and equipment. And then it was decided to move the DLI depot from Fenham Barracks to Branspath Castle in County Durham. And this was a long time since the regiment had had a depot in County Durham. And those who were left, the reservists and the regulars, or those under training, we helped to move, mostly the reservists, helped to move the depot from Fenham to Branspath. And then we set about putting Branspath into order, if you like.
What condition was Branspath in when you...
It was in a poor state, but, you know, where's a will, there's a way. The army always got cracking.
You said it was in a poor state. What do you mean by that?
Well, I don't think there was any water running. There was no light, you know. Parts of the building was in repair, needed repair. And it wanted a good cleaning out, and we did that. We got on with it. It was just moving, just another move as far as the soldier was concerned. Moving into another place, clean up and get settled down, yes.
And when did this occur? Was this...
This was shortly after the... maybe the following week to the declaration of war.
So the beginning of autumn 39.
No, just for the beginning of the war.
How many men were actually at the barracks then?
Oh, Lord, I couldn't tell you.
Was it a battalion or...?
You see, no, there wouldn't be a battalion. There'd maybe be more than a battalion, but what it was, you see, you had your recruits under training there at the depot. You had the DLI depot, recruit training depot. You had the national servicemen in, they were under training. Then you had this great influx of our army reservists coming in. And, you know, each day there, each day at Fenham, if I may relate to it, there was drops being sent away every day to different parts of the country or to different units of the regiment. And I recall on one day we were told to parade all reservists, Durhams and Northumberland Fusiliers, to parade on the barrack square, and we all paraded. And they just said, anyone with machine gun training in the Durhams, take a pace forward. Those without machine gun training in the Northumberland Fusiliers, take a pace forward. Exchange cap badges, you're in different regiments. That's what happened. You see, the skills of the men of one trade were going into the other. You see, that where the regular battalions used to have a company of machine gunners, they were making machine gun regiments. Support regiments, I think they called them later, but they were machine gun regiments. For notification, of two I can recall, three was the Middlesex Regiment, the Cheshire Regiment, and the Northumberland Fusiliers. They were these heavy machine gun or support regiments later on in the war.
What duties did you have when you were at Ransford?
Well, as I say, just the ordinary soldiers' duties of helping to move the depot, which we did do. And then, as I'd not qualified, but I had been used, I had driven a car, I was told to take a car and be company driver at Spennymoor, to the Spennymoor Company. Now, when I saw the car I had to take, it was a civilian car brought in second hand from somewhere. It was a disgrace. It should never, ever, ever been allowed on the road, let alone in the army. It should have been scrapped.
What was wrong with it?
You name it. And that's what was wrong with it. Anyhow...
Was it very old?
It was an old car. You could see the tubes through the tyres. There were slits in the tyres. The brakes wouldn't work. The machine wouldn't work. And yet I got that car to Spennymoor, and when I got there I had punches. I had no gear to repair the punches. As I say, there was nothing. It was a disgrace. I couldn't think of any other word. But the army took it, and that was it. Somebody would get a rip off with that. Some civilian would, because they weren't fit. They should never have been on the road. They should never have been allowed to leave it anywhere. And that's my honest opinion. Now, one day, with this car, I was asked to take some officers from Spennymoor to Bransworth, and I nearly put them into the River Weir because the brakes didn't act. I couldn't change down gear, and it was just by the grace of God that I got it over the narrow bridge and the other side of the road and got it into Bransworth. When I got to Bransworth, I went straight to the MTO and I asked him to do something about it. And he said, you'll have to put up with it until we get repairs, reinforcement parts and everything else. I said, but this vehicle won't go that far. I said, I'm supposed to go to the firing ranges at Sunderland. I said, I've got to go there with this car. I said, I dare not take it out from here. I said, I'm lucky to get here without having injuries to the officers and myself. Well, the next day, when I got back to Spennymoor, I was told I was on draft. I'd been a bit barbary, I think, speaking my mind. But I was being honest, and I've always believed in honesty. I fell foul of the company commander.
What was this, over the car?
Over the car.
Did you actually see the company commander about it?
Oh, aye. I saw the company commander, and I saw the MTO, who was at Bransworth. I saw the MT sergeant, and I said, people who are going out with it were committing suicide. And of course, next day I was told to report back to Bransworth Castle, which I did do, and then I was told I was on draft that day, and I was leaving that day to join the 6th Battalion.
What did you feel about that?
Oh, I wasn't despondent about it. I would have preferred another battalion.
Why was that?
Well, the 6th Battalion wear black buttons. I don't know why. It's their way. They have black buttons, black badges, and I'd been used to bright ones. And I preferred the bright ones to the black ones, but that doesn't matter. Durham's a Durham. They were good lads. I wasn't with them long, mind. Just weeks.
Where were they based?
Chippy Norton, in Oxfordshire, in the old brewery there. Well, there was in the town, in the village, but I was in the brewery, the old brewery. I was built in the old brewery.
And what were your duties at Chippy Norton?
Well, I took my place in a section. Before that, when we arrived, we were detailed to go to the companies. You know, you arrived as a draft, and then the regimental sergeant major or the orderly officer would say, right, there's a list here, names, call the names out, and then you go to your different companies. And when I went to the company where my friend, an old platoon lad in India, a lad I'd soldiered with in India, and a close friend of mine, another good friend, we went to this company, and when we got there, the sergeant major just looked up and he says, good God, not you too. He said, I hope you're not going to bring me any trouble, because he'd been a corporal in the next platoon when we were in India. He was a canny soul. And we said, no, we said we would help out in any way we could, because we knew we were with a territorial battalion. And we told the sergeant major, we said we'd go out of our way, bend backwards to help to train the lads, because we knew they were untrained in field training. And he says, well, I'm pleased to hear that. He said, I thought you might cause us a bit of trouble. But he was laughing when he said it, you know, a bit of leg pull. Old soldiers do that, you know, they pull the legs. And I went to my section. I went to report the platoon sergeant, and he told us what section I was in. There was four of us, by the way, that were posted to that platoon. There was two ex-RNFs, and there was my mate, Joe Gort, and myself. And the platoon sergeant came to us four. It was rather strange. He said, look, he said, I cannot give you lad stripes. He says, because the establishment is made up. He said, I've got full establishment of yours. But he says, the first vacancies, I'll recommend any of you for promotion. But he says, what I want from you lads, he says, will you help us with close combat training? He said, we've never done it. And he said, you're a regular soldier, so you must have done it. And he said, we're not quite up with field training. So he said, would you help us if I put one of you into each section when we're on field training? Will you help us in the field training with signals and what we should do?
Can you remember the platoon and section?
I cannot remember the company even. I wasn't that long enough with them. I'm being honest now. I was only there a very, very short while. I'll give you the reason in a moment.
Did you actually have a chance to work with the men?
Oh, yes. Yes, that's what I was coming to. On one day, shortly after we joined the platoon, we were training in a field, and it was bayonet training, close combat training. And we got the training sticks. And one regular soldier would move while the other regular soldier was showing the professional way of doing the job, of using the bayonet, a fixed bayonet, to the training stick. And each time they would indicate the part of the body of the enemy you would be trying to bayonet. And we were practicing this, and we were getting well on with the lads. The lads were enjoying it. The lads of the 6th Battalion, even the NCOs, who had been a bit grumpy because they'd got regular soldiers, they knew that we were training for real and not just for show-off or anything else. And then out of the blue, a 1500 weight came to the roadside. The driver got out. He says, it's Private Elliot in this lot, the reservist. Just come here. Oh, I says, aye, it's me. CO wants you. So I went to the sergeant. I said, I'm wanted for interview by the CO. He said, well, they better hurry up and get away, lad. He said, but I hope there's not trouble for that. Well, I arrived at battalion headquarters, and when I went in, as you know, Mr. Jeffries, as I'd explained before, was adjutant of this battalion, and he'd been promoted to captain. I met the RSM, who had been a previous 1st Battalion warrant officer when I'd been in the 1st Battalion. And he said, you're not very clean, lad. I said, I've just come off the training field. I said, I couldn't be clean when I've just been training in a field. He said, well, the CO wants to see you. He says, so hurry up. Now, anyhow, I got marched in and the CO turned around and he said, you have been selected to do battement to the divisional commander. If he accepts you, he said, you will keep the good name of the regiment up. If you are returned to duty, you will go straight into the guardroom under close arrest for letting the regiment down. And that was Colonel Miller of the 6th Durhams. And that was the only second time I'd ever seen the man. So,
what was your reaction to this?
I said to the CO, you see, previous to this, the Brigadier of 70th Brigade, Brigadier Churchill, wanted me to be batman, and I turned it down. And two or three officers of lower rank in the regiment, in the battalion, had come, would I be batman driver? And I said, no. I said, I would prefer to help to train the lads and get the lads I was soldiering with fit for war and not fit to be my time, my professional services wasted. Now, the regimental officers were a little bit put out because I said that. And then when I turned the brigadier down, for the same reason, I think this must have been the CO's reaction. Anyhow, I turned around, I said, well, sir...
May I ask you, why do you think you were asked by so many people to be their batman?
No idea. Maybe it's Captain Jeffries had let it out, I don't know. You see, when I saw Captain Jeffries when I arrived, he says, well, Elliot, he says, welcome to the battalion. He said, I've got a good batman, so he says, I cannot give him the sack and employ you, can I? I said, no, sir, no, I wouldn't expect it. And I think it maybe have gone from there. Someone must have passed the word around. And as I say, I was in the CO's office and I turned around. I said, well, sir, I said, to meet a general, I said, I won't even look clean enough. Go to the quartermaster's doors and tell him he's got to give you a brand new battle dress and any clean equipment, the best stuff there is, he says, so that you will be clean. He says, when you get your equipment, blanco it, he says, and get yourself cleaned up thoroughly. Well, you know, this was in no time. Anyhow, I went to the quartermaster's stores, I got a brand new battle dress, and I cleaned myself up to the best I could, and at the appointed time, I was outside the orderly room, and I was... The orderly room was a little bit back from the road, you see, and the RSM said to me, you go down to that footpath and march up and down the footpath. He said, well, you're waiting for the GOC to come. Well, I'd never seen the man. I didn't know who he was. And, you know, there's lots of notices up. Walls of ears and this, that and t'other, you know, security. So I didn't know whether I was being awkward or not. But this staff car came with its pennon flying. And the driver just popped his head out. He was a corporal of the Royal Army Service Corps. He says, is this the 6th Battalion's headquarters? I says, who's asking? He says, I am, corporal. He says, stand to attention when you talk to me. I said, I'm not. I said, not you show me your identification. Well, of course, behind him was the general in his ADC. And the general was laughing like out because I was demanding his... Don't you know who we are? I said, no. I says, I don't. I've never seen you before, so I don't know who you are. No, I said, show your identification. And the general said, corporal, show me AB64. He says, this soldier's only doing his duty. I said, oh, that's not so bad anyway. So the RSM comes belting down. What's happening here? I said, well, I asked for the identification card, sir, and I said, the one driver wouldn't show it, so I said, I wouldn't tell him where the HQ was. And he was going off, you know, like RSMs do when they get vexed. Anyhow, he gave the general a good salute and everything else. Mark took him into the office. Then later on he sent for me. I went in. I don't know how many was in the office. I know the RSM, the adjutant, the CO, the ADC and the general, and I think there was another officer in the office. And the general said, I'm looking for a batman. He says, since this war started, he said, I've had 6 or 7 batmen, and not one has been suitable. He says, now I'm interviewing potential batmen today to see if I can pick a man who might be suitable. He said, your name's been given to me. What do you think about the job? I says, well, sir, the highest rank I've done batman to, I says, is a lieutenant. And I says, there's a vast difference between a lieutenant and a general. But I said, I would always give 100% effort to anyone I did the job to. I said, I may make mistakes, but I said, I will give 100% effort whatever job I have to do. He says, all right. He says, if I select you, he said, would you take 3 months probation? Or he says, will you give me 3 months probation? I said, you mean, sir, that if you don't like me, you'll keep me for 3 months, then return me to duty. And if I don't like being a batman to you, I can ask you to, and you'll let me return to duty. He says, that's correct. I says, yes, sir. I says, on those conditions, yes, I'll accept. I'll accept that agreement. And he was laughing all the time, you know. He had a smile. Not laughing outright, but he had a smile on his face. You know, the eyes, they tell you when the man's being genuine or not. And he says, all right. He said, I'll let you know. If you've been selected, he says, I'll let you know. Well, I'm not sure if it was the next day or a couple of days later. The staff car, the same staff car, the same driver came. And he didn't go to the orderly room, but he came to the company where I was at, the old brewery. And he walked in and he said, oh, he said, you're there. He said, get your gear. He said, you're coming, you're going to be batman to the GOC. I said, oh, hang on a minute, lad. I said, I've got to see the company commander. He says, it's all right, it's all been fixed. He said, it's above board, lad. He said, get your, all your gear, and you can come with me in the car. And he said, I'll take you to HQ. So I arrived at HQ, and then one of the first lads I met was the batman to the GOC, and he was a Green Howard. And he was a bit surly, because I'd got the job, or I was going to take the job from him. He hadn't done the job, presumably to the general satisfaction. So anyhow, I got stuck in.
Can I ask you, before you tell me a little bit more about your duties with General Martel, what were your first impressions of him?
Oh, I thought he was a good man. I thought he'd be a good officer.
Why do you say that?
Just the look. You had the feeling. You always have a feeling of a good bloke. You also get feelings, you know. As a regular soldier, you always mix with officers who are more or less untouchable, if you like. If you like to put it that way, they're a grade higher than you. And through their actions or visual, you get a feeling that you could go with that officer or you couldn't. There's not many men you couldn't go with. Don't let me say or be misunderstood that they were all villains. They weren't. They were doing a job they were trained for. They were professionals like we were. But there was just the odd occasion when one or two were not good enough to be officers. Not that they weren't brave men or anything like that. They just hadn't got the brain to be an officer. How they qualified, some of them, I will never know. But, yes, General Martel, I just looked at General...